In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, October 29th, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. And every week at this time, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important from this week to people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order from number three all the way to number one, and we count them down each week on the Federal News Countdown. This week, a couple of friends on the countdown, and I'm happy to welcome to the studio Rob Burton of Venable and a former deputy OFPP administrator, and you wore your law firm partner costume for the Halloween edition of the Federal News Countdown.
Well, don't I look like a lawyer?
You do. You look exactly like a lawyer. So your costume is fantastic. And my other friend on the countdown is Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller. Nice to see you.
I wear my law firm costume too.
Your costume is horrifying.
But I was an ambulance chaser.
I was terrified when I came in and saw your costume this morning.
Rob, is that wrong to say? Do you not say do lawyers not make those jokes?
Absolutely. They don't have the sense of humor.
Okay. You got a good one in on me today when I cracked on your costume when I first came in.
I won't repeat it.
Why not?
No, because it's fine. I like you too much.
He said, Rob, that I he liked my costume, that he could tell I was dressed as a journalist. So that's a big comedy line for Jason Miller. Great stories that you've chosen on the Federal News Countdown this week, and we will get right to it with
number three.
And coincidentally enough, you've both chosen the same story as the third most important federal news story of the week. Rob and Jason both choosing a story from federalnewsradio.com headline, average time to hire a new Fed cut by 70 days. Rob, since you're the guest, we'll start with you. Why did this make an impact on you? Why do you think this was a big deal? Nancy Kichak saying down to 110 days from as high as 6 months to get somebody into the government.
Well, I know. I think this is really big news, actually. I mean, when I was in the federal government, Francis, I really did have discussions with OPM about what I viewed as one of the biggest challenges facing the federal government. It was then, it is today, mm-hmm. and that is streamlining the federal hiring process. It really is inexcusable how long it takes. And I've had a number of college grads who I think would be great as federal employees say, hey, look, you know, I can't wait 6 to 9 months to get a job. So they go to the private sector. Mm-hmm. I think this is a significant reduction. A 70-day reduction is pretty good. I do have to say OPM then said their goal is 80 days, mm-hmm. which I still think is too long. So I would take issue with their goal. Their goal should be definitely less than 2 months.
Yeah. Jason, when you and I talked about this on the show earlier this week, you mentioned cutting the hiring time as one thing, but also just the fact that they're trying to connect with these potential hires throughout the process. And I think that's really significant, too, because you and I talked about the black hole concept.
There's nothing like submitting your application and wondering, and then all of a sudden you get a call from someone 3-6 months down the line. You go, oh, I guess I remember that job.
Yeah.
And I think part of this, the story that from the ELC conference in Williamsburg and Nancy Kichak comments were, not only are we cut the hiring time, but we're making it easier for applicants to understand where they are in the process. They're around specifically four areas. It's, yes, we received your application. Yes, you made it through the first cut.
Yeah.
Yes, you've been sent to the hiring manager. And yes, you're going to be hired or no. But if you say, okay, I'm disqualified, I didn't make it through. Number two, okay, now I know where I stand. But if you don't know where you stand, there's nothing more frustrating. I guess going back to Rob's point specifically about 80 days is too long, you know, I was having an interesting conversation just before we came in here with Mike Causey, the rock star of Federal News Radio.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, how long does it take for big companies to hire? Do you have, Rob, any idea from your perspective, when you guys hire a law associate or a paralegal or whomever, roughly, can you get it done in a week? Can you get it done in a month?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I think, it, as any lawyer would say, it depends.
Yeah.
It does depend. If it's a huge, mega bureaucratic company, mm-hmm. it could take as long as the federal government. But smaller companies and law firms, you can do it in a matter of weeks. If you really want to hire that person, you can do it certainly within a month.
And if it's a, I would think too, if it's a position where, as Jason's talking about, where qualifications are pretty clear cut, and you're looking at individuals on, and you know, you can narrow it down fairly quickly. That might make a difference too. If you're hiring a partner, you know, somebody of the, say, the Rob Burton level, that's a different deal because that requires a lot more.
And you do go through a number of interviews and so forth, and so it's not an immediate thing. But even didn't take that long.
What I think the difference though is that with the government, it's that black hole issue that Francis brought up initially. You probably had an interview with somebody, then you interviewed again, and you interviewed again, and during you kind of, it happened fairly quickly that you knew that where you were in each step, but you never were just like, all right, they're considering me, I hope I hear from them.
Yeah.
Well, and Jason makes a really good point, because a number of, again, college grads have said to me that one of their big complaints is they never hear another word.
Yeah.
They put their application in, and 6 to 9 months later, they might get a little thing in the mail saying, thank you, but you were not selected.
Yeah.
Or,
well,
they,
no
get,
kidding,
or they get nothing.
Yeah. That, I think, is worse than the length of time for
yes,
the reasons
the lack of communication.
Yeah.
I was just going to bring up one other point. We talk about hiring a lot of people, and obviously, again, going back to my previous conversation with Mike Causey, he said, well, remember, you know, not a lot of people in the government hire people. I mean, it's a managerial thing, and it may only be not every manager hires somebody. But I, the other piece of the story that I thought was fascinating was the fact that they're also looking at the dismissal, how to get rid of people, and I think that's another big thing. I'd like to see what they come up with, both in November with some of these hiring reform announcements that they're going to make, but also over the next year and a half or so, what steps are they going to take to deal with that process? Because that's probably the harder process, to reduce the time it takes to bring someone in, but the time it takes, or the process by which to get someone out.
You know, it's interesting. I've asked that question to a couple of different union representatives, and they say, well, first of all, I can only speak about the employees that we bargain for, but they say the ways to get rid of people are right in the contracts, and all you have to do is read the contracts, or in the case of non-bargained employees, look at OPM policy. You can do it. They shift the blame back to the managers, who are sometimes unwilling to go through the process that you have to go through, or else just not educated about what that process is to get somebody out.
And I think that's part of the problem with all managers, not just government, but industry too. That's why they invented the Peter principle. You just promote them up instead of keeping them with you.
Make them miserable enough that they want to quit.
Well, you know, Francis, there is a move right now to hire more government employees. You know, the administration is pretty much committed to increasing the size of the federal workforce, whether you agree with that or not. And so at a minimum, they better have the hiring process streamlined if they're effectively going to do that.
One of the things that I wonder if we don't spend enough or time paying attention to is retention. I mean, we talk about hiring on a very consistent basis, hiring, and it's certainly important. I'm not minimizing the importance of that. But the old sales saw that I've cited many times on the show, it's easier to keep a customer than find one. And I would think the same thing would apply in HR. It's easier to keep a good employee and cost less. I mean, think about some of the costs that different HR people have cited as far as what you invest when you have to hire somebody new.
You know, what's really interesting are some of these recent studies showing that federal salaries are very competitive. In some instances, the federal salaries are better than the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of publicity may actually help with the retention.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's because the time to find out what you're worth is when you get a chance to go someplace else. And one thing that I know, I don't know if a lot of employees know, that Mike Causey and I have talked about, is that hiring managers in the government have a lot more flexibility than people think at how you grade somebody, how you grade a position, and steps that you can assign to the job.
And to a certain extent, the bonus structures they have, they don't have unlimited bonus, say, like Rob does, but they do have the ability to give some bonuses. I would go back to the retention point. The problem with retention, the reason why I think it doesn't get a lot of attention, is once you get in the government, it took you so long to get in that you feel like, kind of this is relief.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's be honest here. The jobs are pretty good. You do interesting things for the most part. The benefits are good. And the opportunities to move within the government, because I bet the retention numbers don't count. Like, it's only if someone leaves the government.
Yeah.
But if you move from one agency to another, I bet that's not a retention issue.
Yeah.
Because you're still in the government. Mm-hmm. You're in this big umbrella.
That's a good point.
And I think that the retention issues, it's almost like, you know, in what you heard during the .com time, the golden handcuffs.
Yeah.
They got stock options. I got to wait till I vest. With the, you know, it's not so much anymore because the retirement changed, but you still have that idea of, of once you're in, you're in. Yeah. And it's not that you can never get out, but there's the opportunities are endless.
Yeah. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller's story headlined, average time to hire a new Fed cut by 70 days. The number three choice on the Federal News Countdown this week by both himself. Nice job there, by the way, choosing your own story on the
Only
countdown.
One of them.
I think that's great.
I initially told you to just pick any three I did this week.
That's right. Seriously, he did. He said, any of my stories this week, just pick whatever you want.
And I agreed with him.
Just on one.
Well, on this one you happen to. Also selected as the third most important federal news story of the week by Rob Burton of Venable on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Story number two from Jason and from Rob when the countdown continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. For example, if you have a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you're going to end up paying over $400,000 after interest. That's almost a quarter of $1 million that you could be putting into your pocket instead of the bank's. I want to send you a powerful free CD to show you how. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. That's right, no credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. It's easy, it works.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
Stop getting robbed of your money and your future. Call now and I'll rush you a free CD today. Call 1-800-500-2884. For your free CD, call 1-800-500-2884. 1-800-500-2884.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Take down the websites used by extremists. British Minister of Security Pauline Neville Jones called on the U.S. to do just that during a speech at the Brookings Institution. She also urged the U.S. to do more to stop militant threats without going to war. Neville Jones pointed out, in her own words, Al-Qaeda's leaders in Pakistan have shown startling resilience, and their affiliates have both the intent and capability to strike the West. I'm J.J. Green.
When you fly over the North Pole, do you ever think about how remote you are? Airink does, and that's why they have it covered. They're the only company in the world that provides high-frequency data links so that pilots can always communicate with someone on the ground. Airink ensures you're never alone at 35,000 feet. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
What if I said you had the power to speak Chinese or to dream in French? What if you could even read in Italian? You'd be skeptical, right? What if I could prove it to you with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone, one that unlocks your ability to learn any language on Earth? Introducing the all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone, the only language learning program that literally awakens your natural ability. And for the first time ever, they're inviting you to experience their groundbreaking program, absolutely free, with a free demo CD-ROM. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone teaches you your new language with the tools you already have. And now you can experience it for free. Awaken your natural language learning ability today with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Rosetta Stone, your natural ability awakened. That's 1-800-600-6621.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. The Army is going mobile, and they're doing it using an existing application, the Army Knowledge Online Portal. We'll find out what the Army is doing with this mobile platform and why. And one of the big challenges in cybersecurity, finding people. We'll talk to a former Associate Director of National Intelligence about his thoughts on how you find those cyber workers. This afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown stories, chosen by Rob Burton of Venable and Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller, and we're up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Jason Miller. It's from the Dorabeck Insider, and it's headlined, "It's Officially Official, Takai Named DOD CIO." And this is a change because prior CIOs at the Defense Department have had to be confirmed by the United States Senate, and Terry Takai will be the first one to just walk right in and start doing the job.
Well, that's the big change that the Secretary Gates made about a couple months ago. They took away the what they call the ASDNII part of the CIO job, mm-hmm. Assistant Secretary of Defense for Networks, Information, and Integration. And that's why the CIO in the past had always had to be Senate confirmed, because they were an Assistant Secretary of Defense. Now Terry Takai will just be the CIO. And I say just be. It's not like it's a bad thing.
Right.
It's the basically biggest agency in the government. Mm-hmm. And to get to be CIO is a pretty cool thing. Now, the reason why I chose this as my number two story is I think there's some obvious reasons here. But this has been a saga. It's been about 18 months since John Grimes left. They've had some turnover in the office. Some new people are coming in. Dave Winogrand is going out. And the position plays such a big role, not just in DOD, but really across government. Because I think one thing that DOD does better than all the other agencies is they're trendsetters.
Mm-hmm.
They're first to cloud computing. They're first to use their secure ID card for logical access to get onto their computer networks. They're first to, now they're implementing physical access controls using, again, their secure identity card. You know, cybersecurity stuff, they're always out in front. And things really do flow down from DOD to the rest of the government. And having a strong CIO, having someone in place to deal with the policy issues, the technology issues, and really the change management issues cannot be understated. And it's not that Dave Winogrand and Cheryl Robey, who's going to move over to the chief of staff, did a bad job, but they weren't the CIO.
Mm-hmm.
And that does come with some bully pulpit, you know, to make changes to really push a specific set of priorities.
Rob, this restructuring that Secretary Gates has proposed in this one form, at least, working on pretty hard, obviously, has caused a lot of hubbub and in some cases a lot of heartburn around town. As these started to roll out, these initiatives started to roll out, I guess it's been about 2 months or so ago now, what did you think of the ideas to restructure the Pentagon, such as this one, where you're rebuilding the CIO's office?
I don't know. I'll tell you. My personal view is DOD is a big place,
mm-hmm.
and DOD is always restructuring. I mean, I worked at DOD for 20-some years,
yeah.
And I got to tell you, it just seemed to be part of the culture that every couple years, we had to restructure in some fashion. It really didn't matter what level you were talking about, at OSD or one of the defense agencies. There's always restructuring. I think, quite frankly, too much time is spent on reorganizing the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so much time and effort spent on it, and I'm not sure it really results in that much. So it's hard to say in this particular instance whether it's worthwhile or needed,
mm-hmm.
but I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
You're seeing a lot of consternation in your area, the contractor side, where the people who, you know, am I going to get cut, or am I losing people? I mean, what are your clients telling you from a trend perspective of, are people saying, oh, you know, Rob, I'm really worried that we're going to lose this contract, or really got to protest this bid because I'm worried about this other work?
Well, Jason, all this relates really to the government's insourcing initiative right now. And yes, there's a lot of angst in industry, especially with respect to small businesses who actually are losing government contracts and losing their employees to the federal government. And quite frankly, I have not seen anything quite like this before in my 30 years, where the government is aggressively pulling people and contracts back into the government.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of angst in the private sector.
I had a CEO from a contractor tell me off the record the other day that he had a unit of his company that had 119 employees. Contract was canceled for, I'm sorry, I don't know the term. I'm certainly not the contract.
For cause, because
yes,
they can.
That's right.
Not for cause, but for convenience.
Convenience. That's exactly what
cause
it was.
Is bad.
And 80 of those employees were hired by the Defense Department to do exactly the same thing, which I think if I was able to tell you on the record what it was, you would say this is not an inherently governmental task at all.
Oh, no, actually,
at
Francis,
all.
Most of the, in fact, we're representing some folks who are trying to fight the insourcing action by the government. They're commercial services that are being insourced, and aggressively so.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is from the Dorabeck Insider, and the headline is, "It's Officially Official, Takai Named DOD CIO. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're putting up all the stories on the Federal News Countdown this week. And when the countdown continues, Rob Burton's story number two about cybersecurity in the workforce, you'll hear that next on Federal News Radio 1500. 1500 AM.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Tradition never graduates, so make your plans with family and friends to spend the day in Annapolis with Navy football for homecoming Saturday, October 30th at 3:30 p.m. Cheer on the midshipmen in the Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium as they hit the gridiron against the Duke Blue Devils. Presented by SAIC, USAA, and Verizon Wireless. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by logging on to NavySports.com. Order today and join us for a game day atmosphere like no other. Enjoy fall in Annapolis with friends and family and see quarterback Ricky Dobbs lead the midshipmen as they take on Duke Saturday, October 30th at 3:30. Presented by SAIC, USAA, and Verizon Wireless. Don't miss out on all the Navy football excitement, where tradition never graduates. Order your tickets today. Call 1-800-US-4-NAVY or visit NavySports.com. That's 1-800-US-4-NAVY or NavySports.com.
Did you know that eating less than 1,000 calories a day can actually make your body gain weight instead of lose it? To lose weight, you have to feed your body right. Hi, I'm Sam Preston from Slender Smoothies. When I looked around for a weight loss solution that would work for me, I couldn't find one that fed my body right. So I decided to create my own. My patented weight loss smoothies are so effective, so powerful, that I'm going to let anyone who calls today try them for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-370-4483. And now I've made Slender Smoothies even better, because if you're one of the first 100 callers, you'll not only receive a 2-week trial, you'll also receive my revolutionary blender bottle absolutely free, plus free shipping and handling. Call 1-800-370-4483. That's 1-800-370-4483.
Profile America, Friday, October 29th. The scene on this date in 1945 at Gimbel's department store in New York City was a madhouse. Big ads the day before had trumpeted the first sale in the U.S. of a new writing instrument, which it guaranteed would write for 2 years without refilling, the ballpoint pen. By the end of the day, the store had sold its entire stock of 10,000 at $12.50 each. The new pens were invented by two Hungarian brothers who set up a factory in Argentina. The idea of the ballpoint pen was first patented in 1888 by John Loud of Massachusetts, who never made any pens. Now, ballpoints are a standard item in the nation's 8,600 office supply stores, which have sales of nearly $21 billion a year. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Companies win federal contracts every day. Your business should be one of them. Get the latest on the top federal contracting opportunities for 2011 at Input's FedFocus event. FedFocus is the government contracting community's premier event that showcases the outlook for defense and civilian markets, data center consolidation trends, and more. Join Input on November 4th at the Fairview Park Marriott in Falls Church, Virginia, and lead your business to success. Register at FedFocus2011.input.com or call Input Events at 703-707-3698.
NBC News Radio, I'm Mike Vaccaro at the White House, where a spokesman says President Obama was notified of a potential terrorist threat last night and has been kept updated about cargo searches on planes in Philadelphia, Newark, and New York City this morning. NBC's Pete Williams says there are reports of a suspicious toner cartridge with wires and powder found during a routine screening in Britain.
We have no report of any actual explosive devices or actually tampered toner cartridges being found in the U.S.
In other news, overnight, shots were fired again at a Washington area Marine Corps museum, similar to other shots fired at the Pentagon building and a Marine recruiting center earlier this week. FBI Assistant Director John Perrin says no one was hurt.
We believe this suspect has a grievance surrounding the U.S. Marine Corps.
On the economy, the government says new stats just out show slow but steady growth. a slightly faster 2% rise over the third quarter. I'm Mike Vaccara, NBC News Radio.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
Motorcycle owners, here's something to stash in your saddlebags. GEICO could save you money on motorcycle insurance, and here's how easy it is. You call GEICO and speak to a specialized motorcycle agent who gives you a free rate quote. If you're like thousands of other riders, the rate is less than what you pay now. And before you can say, cha-ching, the agent also tells you about 24/7 emergency road service for less than a dollar a month. Savings. It's what we do for people. Call today for a free rate quote. GEICO. Saving people money on more than just car insurance.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and the second most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Rob Burton of Venable. The former deputy OFPP administrator is a Federal News Radio story by some reporter for the station that I've never heard of before, with the headline, Cyber Workforce Cannot Be a Zero-Sum Game. And it's a conversation with Philip Reitinger talking about the importance of not poaching, essentially, from each other's agencies to fill cybersecurity positions. There are a lot of them open in government. Philip Reitinger saying he needs to hire about 1,000 at DHS and talking about some of the other things. What did this story say to you as you read it, Rob?
Well, first of all, I had to pick something dealing with cybersecurity because October is Cybersecurity Month.
Yeah, this is the last In-Depth with Francis Rose for National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. How
so
about
I had
that?
To have an article on cybersecurity, and then Jason wrote it, so I felt even more compelled.
Oh, so you're just throwing him a bone. That's nice of you.
I'm honored to be in the room of both of your presence.
Oh, man, it's getting deep in here.
But seriously, this is a huge issue. I mean, here, I want to read you something, Francis, because this is going to scare you. Between 2006 and 2007, only 9,000 college graduates majored in computer science, and only 900 of them, 10%, specialized in IT, security. This is a lost art, or mm-hmm. maybe we never had it in the first place.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, this is the new area. Cybersecurity, protection of government data is huge, and we have to have the talent to do it. Otherwise, I think we're going to be very vulnerable in the future.
Well, we've got two problems with this, I think. One is they're the same thing, essentially, but one of them is short-term and one of them is long-term. One of the short-term part is what you're addressing in this piece, Jason, and that is X agency needs Y number of people to fill these jobs today. The long-term problem is, Rob, you and I were talking before we went on the air about your 11-year-old son. My son is 10. You have a 10?
Daughter who's 10.
Okay. And your son is how old?
8.
So these are the kids that we need to be figuring out. One of the three of our kids, son or daughter, whatever, we should figure out a way to speak to them in a language that they understand to get them interested in this kind of field. It's a terrific field. Working for the government's a good place to be, or working in the private sector is a good place to be. And 1 out of 4, I think, is about the right number based on the kind of numbers that I'm hearing between government and the private sector. What do you think of that, Rob?
And I'm not sure how the government is going to do it. You know, like, for example, you said DHS had a goal of 1,000
uh-huh.
IT security professionals by 2012 they're shooting for. That's pretty soon.
That's Yeah.
And I don't see how they're going to do it. And I'll tell you one thing I'm really concerned about, Francis, is, and we were talking about this whole insourcing thing. There's a move right now to sort of do it in-house,
mm-hmm.
you know, the idea of not relying on the private sector. With respect to cybersecurity professionals, I don't think this is a good time to try to do it alone. I think the government has got to rely on the private sector and use some of their expertise and some of their IT solutions to address these problems. it really does concern me that there's this attitude, well, we'll just do it in-house.
But when you lay the insourcing layer on top of it, there are companies that are telling me, I'm hesitant to go out and recruit all these people, get them qualified, get them aware of what's happening in an agency, and 6 months or a year from now, they're going to go to work for the agency, and I'm going to have to start all over
again. Well, that is the government solution right now, is that we'll just hire the contractor employees.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole article really is emphasizing, that they're not enough to go around. Industry and government are stealing from each other. Agencies are stealing from one another because there are just not enough of these employees. But this brings up one other thought, Francis, on this topic, and it occurs to me it's a word of caution not to put 100% emphasis on people, because it's just not going to happen. I think the government has got to be smarter about using technology to solve some of these problems. And there, again, they need to look to the private sector, because one thing I've learned is the private sector actually does have some innovative IT-related solutions to protect data and to detect fraud with respect to data. And the government really needs to be smarter about this.
I think there's two things going on here. I think, first of all, I don't think the government is discounting the private sector. I mean, for instance, look at the networks contract, the telecommunications contract, the MTIPS. That is a key cybersecurity piece that they're trying to implement. Now, the other piece of this is the government also is trying to say, okay, what was inherently governmental that we, if you will, outsourced, contracted out for in the last administration, and let's bring that back in. And on top of that, we see a need for more cybersecurity professionals. So I don't know if they're trying to insource necessarily cybersecurity professionals or trying to steal. Well, I think stealing is going on both ways. I don't think it's one way or the other. I mean, if you look at the one example that Phil Reitinger brings up is Bobby Stempfli goes from DISA to DHS, while Michelle Kwan goes from DHS to RSA. Now, in 5 years, Michelle Kwan could come back in and Bobby Stempfli go back to DOD, and who knows what could happen. There could be so much change. I think the issue is, was Francis pointed out, the STEM education, the science, technology, engineering, math education. Now, on one hand, you hear a lot about it. I think when I was a kid, they told us how we needed to learn more science, technology, engineering, and math. Now they're saying the same thing. I'm interested to know if it's a real problem or if it's kind of a very easy way to bang the drum to get more people interested, to kind of rile people up so they start going in that direction, because the next the economy is only going to be bolstered by innovation in those areas. We're not going to see a big manufacturing push in 20 years.
Here's something that I think might be a monkey wrench in all of this. Rob, you were talking about another one of your kids before we went on the air who's in the college application process, trying to decide what it is, where he wants to go, and all of that. I mentioned my son is 10. He's in advanced math in Montgomery County. He's going to be so far down the math track by the time he even gets to thinking about college, which is good. I'm not sorry that he's been able to do that, but he's going to be distracted, I think, from other career choices other than something like IT security. And he's the kind of candidate that I would think that a college and eventually an agency would want to get in to do this kind of thing. So that's why I kind of go back to the idea that I talked about with Pat Clawson of Lumention on Wednesday on the show, which is, we should go younger. If we want to think about the long-term solution here, we should be figuring out ways to go younger. When Melissa Hathaway was on a couple of months ago, she has a kid that's in the same age range. And she said, you know, somebody, either a company or somebody, academia, whatever, should come out with a Nintendo DS game that's about, that's, you know, like a 24 type thing about catching cyber criminals.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Francis. But I think one thing Jason pointed out in the article is what's really disconcerting is there's really no education, even at the higher levels, in this subject area. This is a very specialized subject area. And I think you did mention, Jason, the University of Maryland is rolling out a program, and maybe even a department that's going to be focused on cybersecurity and developing cybersecurity professionals.
I'm confident in the ability of academia when there is a demand, when some kid says, I want to come and study this, when there's a mass of that, that will get those programs, Rob. I feel better about that than I do about how what we're doing to stimulate that demand for the kids who want to study it.
Good point.
One of the other things that University of Maryland is doing is, and they're not alone, I think you're going to see this pop up at GW, at American, a lot of places, is they're saying, we're not only looking at the college-age kids, but the second career people, the people who say, you know, I've been doing systems engineering or software development, and really I'm really interested in cyber. I'm going to get my master's degree in cybersecurity. And they're also focusing on the policy people who maybe have an MBA and say, you know, I think I'm going to go in a policy direction and really understand how cybersecurity policy fits in on this. And I think that's – I would agree with you, Rob. That's a key piece. Now, the other – on the other hand, they also are looking at certificates. So government employees who maybe are in the CIO office and they want to expand their knowledge, they can get a certificate in cybersecurity or in IT security. So they see a market that they're trying to address, the supply and demand. Now, the question is, how many people use it? Will people pay for it? Will the government pay for it? You know, the tuition reimbursement. One of the things the government has around cybersecurity is the ability to do direct hires. They've had that since 2003. I don't think it's used very often. And that is of concern because one of the things from this event that I went to that Jim Lewis from CSIS spoke about was how long it takes to hire people. So mm-hmm. I went to Jim and said, well, they have the direct hire authority. And Jim said, yeah, but then security clearances. If you don't have a security clearance, you can't work in this area.
Yeah.
So it's not just hiring. It's not just education. It's
all of this stuff that we always talk about all woven together.
Exactly. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of the acquisition workforce. You know, we complained for years that the acquisition employees were not treated as professionals, mm-hmm. that it was not viewed as a profession. I think with the cybersecurity workforce, mm-hmm. it's the same thing. It's not viewed as a profession, and the government needs to view it as a profession.
Story number two on the Federal News Countdown is chosen by Rob Burton is my colleague Jason Miller's story headlined, Cyber Workforce Cannot Be a Zero-Sum Game, and you can find that later this afternoon along with all the stories we're counting down on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We are up to story number one for Jason Miller and Rob Burton, and we'll count down story number one from each of them when we resume the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
IT professionals and graduates from around the country have a lot to say about their experiences from the online Masters in Information Systems from UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
My current title is Chief of Technology. That was one of the things that I was actually looking for, was to have chief or officer within my position title.
Apply today for our upcoming semester. For more information, call 1-800-353-UMBC or visit us online at onlinems.umbc.edu.
Here's Judy Spencer, co-chair, Federal Identity, Credential, and Access Management at GSA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Identity Management, sponsored by SafeNet.
I believe we're going to move away from the smart card as the hardware token. I see mobile phones coming into their own. I actually believe that in the very near future there will be an app for that. And it will be my identity credential somehow or other linked into my phone as the hardware token that carries it around.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
From defending our nation's borders to protecting the environment, cloud computing services can support your mission and serve the American public. Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows agencies to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
Newsmakers on the Dora Beck Insider.
Tom Trabuco, he is the Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Since the measurement on contributions to 401ks and the TSP is similar to the measurement used to determine an increase in Social Security benefits, and those have already been determined to not have an increase, I would be very surprised if there were an increase in the IRS limits this year.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dora Beck Insider.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is the show every week where two experts in the federal government choose the news stories they think were most important to people who work for the government this week. They rank them in order from number three to number one, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 2. This week on the Countdown, Jason Miller, my colleague from Federal News Radio, and Rob Burton of Venable, former OFPP administrator, are the experts choosing the stories, and we're up to
number one.
The most important story of the week, according to Jason Miller, is Max Kakis' story on federalnewsradio.com, headlined, Fate of Cyber Bills Hangs on Lame Duck Session. And like many things in town, the congressional calendar is, it appears, will dictate exactly what happens when it comes to cybersecurity for the foreseeable future.
Well, absolutely. And obviously, election's coming up just next week. That's a big what's going to bring a signal where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little surprised the fact that the cyber bills aren't going to get through. A couple of reasons. Number one, a lot of it, not all of it, is non-controversial. I've seen some of the drafts, at least the talking points around the drafts. There are some controversial issues in the bill, but overall the bill, everyone agrees we need better cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
We need improvements to the Federal Information Security Management Act, FISMA. And there was a lot of talk that they would get this through the comprehensive bill,
mm-hmm.
even if that meant taking out some of the more parts that people disagreed upon, but they were going to get a big chunk of this through.
Yeah.
And the fact is, if you read this article by Max Kakis, what they're saying is, probably have to reintroduce it next year.
Yeah.
And if they reintroduce it, the question is, okay, how long does that take now? And the longer you wait for changes in law, the more agencies go through the FISMA exercise, which too many believe it's too much about compliance,
yep.
not enough about actual security.
Yep.
And then you have a bunch of other issues, both critical infrastructure protection and the public-private partnerships, and that aren't going to be addressed until, you know, 6 or 9 months down the road. And then if as many people believe, the Republicans take over the House and the Democrats are in the Senate, getting those two to kind of come together around a bill becomes even more difficult. Now, I'm not advocating that they push this through just because one or both of the parts of Congress could change, but it's just a little surprising that the chances just have decreased so much over the last few months.
But when you think about the fact that, I mean, we're way far behind in the budgeting and appropriations process. I can't imagine that's going to be able to be done in the 3 weeks or so that they probably, maybe not even that long, but they'll spend in a lame duck session. So I have to say I'm kind of the opposite of you. I was not surprised at all to hear this conversation at Heritage and think about the idea that we're not going to see anything till who knows when. Because of the reasons that you're talking about what might happen.
And really the budget issues, that will get taken by a continuing resolution, I would guess probably through February or March, and then they'll have to do something, some kind of negotiations to pass an omnibus bill,
mm-hmm.
and once again the agencies are in that situation. But, you know, the cyber bill, again, the fact is it's not controversial. People on Capitol Hill, took them years to get it. Oh yeah, cybersecurity, this computer thing, it's important. We got to protect the computers. I mean, they've been hit by hacks. They've been affected by malware and viruses. It just, I figured that this was one of those issues that you can look at, like, it's not partisan. Let's make this happen. And now, obviously, lame duck session, potential change in the makeup of the House and the Senate. Big changes.
Yeah. What do you think these changes portend, not just, Rob, for cybersecurity necessarily, but for anything happening anytime soon?
Oh, you mean the
changes? Changes in Congress that it looks like are going to happen.
Well, one thing for sure, everything's going to be slowed up. I mean, nothing's going to move fast, assuming that the House is taken by the Republicans, which all the political pundits say is going to happen next
mm-hmm.
week. I think you'll see everybody sort of stand back. The Republicans are going to want to get their agenda together and decide what they want to push.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see fast movement on anything, especially if the Democrats retain control of the Senate. So you're going to get this tension between the two chambers.
Yeah, it's going to be a bound-up town, it sure looks like. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller's number one story on the Federal News Countdown is headlined, Fate of Cyber Bills Hangs on Lame Duck Session. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and find it, of course, by searching on Max Kakis at federalnewsradio.com. Rob Burton's story number one will wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown when we return on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500.
How is the New York City Department of Environmental Protection using innovation to protect, collect, and deliver water to over 8 million people? What about the city's efforts to be greener and make its operation more sustainable? And how is New York City ensuring its water system is viable for the next 100 years? Listen next week as these topics and more will be explored with Cass Holloway, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight, brought to you by Cisco.
Some federal agencies fret about not having enough cybersecurity experts, not the Navy. It grows its own. Here's Kevin Cooley, Command Information Officer, Navy Fleet Cyber Command, 10th Fleet.
We have a fairly comprehensive training program inside of the Navy. We train information technology specialists. We train cryptologic technicians. We train people in our intelligence community. And we constantly work to revamp that training and adjust it as the needs emerge.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Human capital management for the federal government is the most anticipated training conference this year, with keynote speaker John Barry, director of OPM and chief people person of the U.S. federal government. Don't miss this year's event, to be held on November 15th through the 17th at the Sheraton Premier in Vienna, Virginia. Check out the website hcmfederal.com for more information. And to register now, mention code HCMF for a $200 discount.
Thanks for listening to the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we're all the way to the top of the choices from Venable's Rob Burton on the Countdown this week. Your number one story, Rob, is a Washington Post story that is headlined, Karzai Renews Opposition to Security Firms After Meeting. This has been a continuing theme with Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan. He said, I guess originally it was about 2 or 3 months ago, all private security firms in Afghanistan out. What doesn't want him there anymore, reiterated that this week. What does that mean for some of these companies that are doing business there and providing a service, albeit sometimes a controversial one, to our people who are over there?
Well, I tell you, it did get me fired up. I mean, I cannot believe, you know, here we are basically rebuilding Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and we are private security firms are providing protection to the workers who are involved in the reconstruction projects. And we've got the president of Afghanistan saying he doesn't like that, and he wants them. Yeah, you're right. He said he wanted them out by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Then he retracted a little bit and said, well, maybe I'll grant a few exceptions. I cannot even believe this is an issue, and it really, I find it offensive that the president of Afghanistan would be actually saying this, and I think he means it. And
he said it enough that I think he really
does mean it. And my question is, why are we continuing with the reconstruction projects? And actually, that may very well be what happens, because if there's no security for the company personnel working on the reconstruction projects, it's very possible the private companies, the U.S. private companies, will have to leave Afghanistan because they're not going to keep their – rightly so. They're mm-hmm. not going to have their employees not protected.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people say, well, the U.S. military should be doing this, and – it's not going to happen. I don't think politically we're going to be sending more troops over. We don't have enough troops there to protect the folks on the reconstruction projects.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to happen. And I don't think it's going to happen that the Afghan security forces are going to do a very good job of protecting our people either.
Because part of the reason we're still there militarily in the first place.
Exactly. They're not up to speed to protect our people. Well, so I really feel sorry for these security companies because they're getting it from both ends. They're getting it from the president of Afghanistan. They're also getting it here at home.
Mm-hmm.
Our Congress is basically raising questions about whether this function, the security functions that these companies are performing, whether this is inherently governmental work that should be done by government personnel.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't win. You know, overseas, the president's telling them to get out. And here at home, questions are being raised as to whether this is work that should be properly performed by U.S. government personnel.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some ways, though, what they're facing here is either too much success on their own, meaning they've done a good job, they kept people safe, but they're also facing the one bad apple spoils the whole bundle problem, where you've had some instances of security contractors doing bad things, and now someone's going, whoa, they all must be bad, let's get them all out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, on top of that, you have the special IG for reconstruction coming out with reports about just contracting more generally. Now, this may not affect Hamid Karzai in Afghanistan, but it does affect what Congress says, what the State Department's looking at, what the Defense Department's looking at. So there, I think it's a bunch of things that are kind of piling on that are going to affect these companies. And eventually, yeah, it's billions of dollars. I remember I got a press release recently from the Professional Services Council, and they were talking about this issue, and I said, well, how big of a deal is this? And they wrote back, well, it's billions of dollars in contracts. This kind of took me by surprise because you just don't think about it in that sense.
Yeah,
I do think the president's Karzai's comments may actually add fuel to the fire with respect to the insourcing debate here in the United States, because his opposition to these private security firms may actually fuel the movement to insource some of this work to the government.
What about,
which I don't think is going to happen.
Who would
I don't
do
think
it?
It's a practical.
Who would do it?
Exactly.
State gets a military force?
I don't think the U.S. government can do it.
Yeah.
I think they need the private sector on this one.
But then you go back to the whole issue, too. The thing that you said I thought was most interesting, Rob, is it really conceivable that we could get to a point where companies won't go in and do the work?
I mean, if you don't have any security, I would certainly be hesitant to show up for work.
I know it's not the greatest place in the world to be, but.
Well, until things, calm down, if you will, if they ever do, I'm not sure, again, if you're out there building schools, building hospitals, building roads, oil pipelines, whatever it is that you're building, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan, if you're getting attacked, eventually you're going to say that the cost, the risk is way too much compared to the costs and the benefits.
What I can't figure out, Francis, is why President Karzai finds the security forces, the private security forces, to be such a negative thing in his country.
Well, it's like a private police force working in your country. I mean, I don't think we would ever accept if the UK sent over a private security force. Now, I guess they have them in their embassies, but they don't have no jurisdiction outside their embassies.
Right.
And if they're protecting the Prime Minister of England and someone shoots at the Prime Minister of England,
they're protecting U.S. employees.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think there's a difference.
Well, this controversy is not going away anytime soon, and I appreciate the choice of this story, Rob, as your number one story of the week from the Washington Post. Karzai renews opposition to security firms after meeting. You can find all the news stories that Rob Burton and Jason Miller have chosen for the Federal News Countdown this week at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Gentlemen, thank you very much for another great Federal News Countdown.
Thanks, Francis.
Great to have both of you on the show. Next week, the Federal News Countdown continues, and we're back with a brand new in-depth on Monday at 1 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Dorabeck Insider is next. Federal News Radio's Chris Dorabeck kicking me out of here shortly for the Halloween edition of the Dorabeck Insider on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.